During this challenging cold and flu season, supporting your immune health is top priority. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with an effective 1-2 punch from our friends at Protocol for Life Balance. Protocol's abiotic soft gels and Sambucus Black Elderberry Liquid both have vital natural compounds that help your immune system fight what the season throws at you. Go to drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance for more information and to order these great products. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our subject is the low FODMAP diet. It's a diet that alleviates the suffering of patients with irritable bowel syndrome, with SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, in part one with the author of Healthy Gut, Flat Stomach, Daniel Capolino, who's our guest today. We laid the groundwork for our discussion. So let's drill down and look at the particulars. FODMAP stands for, you say it.
Yes, so FODMAP stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I know
okay.
It's a complete mouthful.
Okay, you went to MIT, you have a degree in, but for some of our listeners, that's a little daunting. So break it down for us. What are, you know, let's look at each of those compartments and look at the foods that comprise them.
Yes. So the F in FODMAP stands for fermentable. So it's not really a category of foods exactly, but it's a descriptor that tells us that all of these different foods are highly fermentable, meaning the bacteria like to eat them. And when bacteria kind of chow down on these foods are poorly digested, and bacteria produce byproducts just like we do. And their byproduct is gas, which leaves us with a bloated stomach. Another thing that can happen is that because this food is poorly digested, water will be drawn into your intestines, and that can result in the uncomfortable and potentially embarrassing symptom of diarrhea.
It's called osmotic diarrhea. It's kind of a water gets pulled into your intestine, and then it's like liquefies your stool, and then you're off to the races.
Exactly. So that's the F. The O in FODMAP stands for, again, oligosaccharides. What that is just a fancy word for a short chain of carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
And the foods that fall
so
into this category.
Oligo would be, you know, yeah. A little linguistic lesson here. It's like, you know, we talk about America's an oligarchy, you know, or Russia's an oligarchy.
Exactly.
I mean, I think we can argue whether America's an oligarchy, but Russia for sure is an oligarchy. And these are very few people run it. You know, a monarchy like one king, oligarchy, few people run it, you know. And that, so oligo means a few saccharides. So these are like short chains of sugars. Not
exactly.
Hundreds or thousands of them, but maybe how many? Like dozens or, you know, count on one hand.
Yeah, something. Yep.
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 So they're not really starches, but they're starch-like in that they're necklaces of sugars that have to be broken down. And that makes them problematic in terms of digestion for some people.
Exactly. And the foods, there's two different main categories of foods that fall into oligosaccharides. Those are fructans and something called galacto-oligosaccharides, or GOS. And again, these words are not particularly helpful for the average person because it doesn't really tell you what foods we are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you a few examples
Sure.
of foods that fall into these categories. They're quite diverse. So you have garlic, you have onions, cashews, chamomile tea, wheat, barley, and rye, and beans. Those are just, you know, a big handful of the more common foods, let's call them.
So it's interesting, you mentioned wheat. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, if you don't have celiac disease, it's okay to eat wheat. But according to this, This is a different mechanism by which you can have problems with wheat. You don't have to have celiac disease to have major gastrointestinal problems or even an allergy to wheat. This is not an allergy to wheat. This is because of the fructan content of wheat that is hard to digest for some people.
Exactly. And I think this is a big reason why many people report that they feel better on a gluten-free diet,
right,
even when they do not have celiac disease.
That could be a big part of it.
Yeah, it might not be the gluten, it might be the FODMAP.
Okay, very interesting. Okay, so so you know, they say beans, the musical fruit, the more you eat, the more you know the rest of it. And that's the galactooligosac, the GOS.
Exactly.
Things.
Okay. Exactly. Yes.
Now it said that
one people are not as surprised about because we know that childhood song.
It's said that beans have something in them which blocks digestion. It's kind of a natural starch blocker. And is that part of that? Because beans are meant to be ingested by animals, and they're protected from digestion, and then the animal travels to the other side of the mountain and does its business and leaves the seed intact in the ground, and then the plant can grow. You know, plants can't get up and move, so that's actually one of the ways that seeds propagate, is that they have digestion inhibitors in them that make them more harder to break down.
And so when you say that, are you referring to more like the phytates or something like that? Or is it more of some? Okay. So we need an enzyme to help break down beans. So, yes, they would fall into this category, really, because they're quite difficult to digest, although also very healthy.
By design. Okay, so you introduce another point here, which is people are confused because they've been told to eat a lot of fiber. Fiber's healthy.
Right.
So actually, paradoxically, what happens with some IBS sufferers is they're told, you need to be on a high fiber diet. Make sure you eat tons of fiber. You know, have lots of, fruits and vegetables and whole grains. No need just, refined, white rice and Wonder Bread. Eat lots of whole grains. But it turns out that can backfire because those are higher in FODMAP, right? The good things. The so-called good things.
Yes, certainly. I mean, we all, most of us really should be trying to eat more fiber, but there is a lot of overlap between the foods that have high fiber and the foods that are high FODMAP. So when you're following this diet, it is important to try to make sure that you are still getting sources of fiber that are lower in FODMAP.
Okay.
But even aside from that, there are definitely people who are just eating way too much fiber to try to treat their IBS, and it can backfire for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the next category is under D, right?
D, okay. So D is for disaccharides. And to follow with your Greek lesson, I guess.
Yeah, D, right.
Di means two. So in this case, we're talking about lactose. And lactose is a disaccharide because it is made of two sugars, glucose and galactose, that are linked together. And we need an enzyme called lactase to break them apart in order to digest them. And there are many people who do not have any or enough of the lactase enzyme and therefore are lactose intolerant.
Mm-hmm. And another disaccharide, of course, is table sugar, which is sucrose. That's a disaccharide as well, right?
Yes.
Do some people have more problems with table sugar as a result, or is it just the fact that it's so sweet and any sweet sugar is a fuel for bacterial proliferation?
You know, that's actually a great question. Table sugar does not fall into the category of being high FODMAP.
Okay.
In fact, that's one of the bright points of the diet.
Oh, okay. Hey, hooray.
You can eat sugar in limited quantities.
Okay.
But that's not to say that everyone tolerates sugar. In fact, table sugar, that is. You probably see this in your practice. I don't see it very frequently at all, but there are definitely people who have a sucrase deficiency and are really respond poorly to eating table sugar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
that is sort of a separate issue, though.
Okay, so while we're talking about the disaccharides, I mean, let's get clear on lactose intolerance, because a lot of people say, okay, yeah, that means no dairy.
Exactly.
Or,
that's not what it means, right?
Right. It's just some dairy is high in lactose, and some is permissible under this diet.
Correct. So most people believe that lactose and dairy are synonymous, and they are not. So foods like butter and aged hard cheeses, like Parmesan, Swiss cheese, are actually very low in lactose content. Also, any foods like milk that have lactase added to them. So there's a brand called Lactate Milk. There's an organic brand that makes a lactose-free milk. Kefir also is very low in lactose. So those are all foods that are low in lactose, but they are still dairy foods. There's mm-hmm. been lactose-free yogurt that you can get. There's
even
really
ice cream.
A lot of
I think there's even ice cream now.
Yes, there is even ice cream. I know, I was trying to avoid saying that as a nutritionist, but yes,
right.
You can eat ice cream.
Yeah, for every phenomenon, there are going to be some people who want to make it, like, delicious, easy to follow, and, maybe that's undermining the concept a little bit because then people take in too much in the way of sugar. But, okay, that being the case, let's move on to monosaccharides. Mm-hmm. The mono is, okay, a monocle is like, one glasses instead of, two glasses. That means one sugar.
Yep.
And there's some people have problems with one sugar, right?
Yeah, so in this case, the one sugar that we're talking about is fructose.
Ah, yes.
And fructose, which is, sort of synonymous with high fructose corn syrup and bad, which it is. But in this case, when we say fructose, we're actually talking about fructose when it's in excess of glucose.
Oh.
So basically, in order to absorb fructose, you need glucose to help shuttle it in.
Oh,
and when there's more fructose than glucose, the door closes and many people, it's actually very common to not absorb fructose properly.
So
it's just that more people malabsorb it than are symptomatic.
So what's an example of fructose accompanied by glucose where it's okay versus fructose where there's an imbalance, too much fructose, not enough glucose to enable it to be properly absorbed?
So pretty much all of the fruits have some fructose. The ones that or low FODMAP are the ones that are balanced. So, for example, like bananas, oranges, strawberries, blueberries are more balanced.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's lists in your book, and, you can Google low FODMAP, and, you'll see it.
Yep.
By the way, is there uniform agreement about FODMAP? Because I seem to remember that different sites rate foods differently in terms of their FODMAP content. Is it like one?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said that. Yeah, that's very, very much true. So I had mentioned earlier about Monash University as being the pioneer in discovering and promoting this diet. They are also the leaders in terms of testing foods.
Mm-hmm.
For FODMAP content. Unfortunately, all over the internet, you can find some reliable and some really unreliable information about FODMAP content of food.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of inconsistency, and, this is one of those cases where Googling is not necessary. You have to discern. If it's a dietitian who has the information, then hopefully it is better information. Monash University actually has an app,
mm-hmm.
which is very handy, and a lot of patients like that. So you can, you know, it's obviously something you can carry around, and you can look up the different, the FODMAP content of different foods, which is helpful because some foods are not high or low, but they're sort of in the middle, and which means that they're okay in smaller portions.
Mm-hmm. And so, and then that's a useful point too, because mm-hmm. people are really, you know, when it comes to diet, people get really strict. You know, they think, oh my goodness, if I have a smidgen of this,
right.
I'm going to blow the whole thing wide open. That's not the way this works, right? This is based on volume. And, you know, if a little bit of FODMAP creeps in here and there, unless you have a very low threshold for symptoms, you may be okay. It may be based on having kind of an overwhelming challenge with FODMAP. You know, like French onion soup could send you over the edge, but having like, you know, like a small, you know, bit of onion in a food would not.
Exactly. I love that. I think it's my favorite thing about this diet is that it's not all or nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you don't blow it if you
like celiac disease, for example. A very tiny amount, you know, like a gram of gluten could throw your intestines into disarray. With this, it's not quite as bad. Okay, so we got to all the way down to the P in FODMAP, and that's polyols, which kind of actually one of the more interesting ones. I don't think a lot of people recognize that they could have problems with this type of food component. So tell us about that.
So within polyols, there's two categories, sorbitol and mannitol, that can be problems, which, once again, don't tell us what foods we're talking about. So some examples of high polyol foods are apples, cauliflower, mushrooms, even avocado falls into this category.
Mm-hmm.
There are other fruits in there as well. The other thing that falls into the category of polyols are artificial sweeteners.
Yeah, like sorbitol and gum.
Exactly.
Xylitol, which I love in gum and lozenges, but it can, for irritable bowel syndrome sufferers, too much can cause unpleasant bloating and diarrhea.
So, exactly. And so for some people, they might be thinking, oh my gosh, I'm chewing gum that's made of xylitol. That could honestly be the one thing for you to change that could make a huge impact if you're suffering from digestive issues.
Okay. So it's worth looking. When it comes to fruits, and then, of course, you drink the juice, you're really concentrating it. So pears, I think, relatively high in sorbitol, a type of sugar that's a sugar alcohol. And I also noticed that some of the foods that are low net carb foods, you know, like the Atkins foods, they're really trying to go very low carb. So they give you a sweetener that's a sugar alcohol, and that could be problematic, right, for some people.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, so
those fake sugars are a digestive nightmare.
Yeah. Okay. So all right. So so when you do this, you do this for a couple of weeks, 2-6 weeks, to ascertain what you're sensitive to. Okay, it sounds like a lot of things to eliminate. What can you eat on this diet?
There are plenty of things that you can eat. You'll notice that all the foods that we've talked about are carbohydrates. So even foods you don't think of as carbohydrates, like garlic and onions, these are all carbohydrates. But that means that protein and fat are not included in this low FODMAP plan at all. So those are completely on the table. So eggs, meat, fish, chicken, is all low FODMAP. Sources of fat, many nuts, and then there are also, of course, plenty of fruits and vegetables that you can have. One of the good things about this diet is that there are ways to kind of get around and kind of make anything work for you. So, for example, I would say probably the two hardest foods to avoid are onions and garlic. Mm. They're just in everything. Mm-hmm. And if you're a home cook, especially, one really great way to kind of get the flavor but not get the FODMAPs is to use infused oil.
Mm, okay.
The reason you can do that is because the FODMAP component of the garlic and the onions, it is not fat soluble.
Okay.
It's water soluble. So because oil is a fat, you can cook onion or garlic in oil, remove the onion or garlic, and then use the oil with the flavor in it.
Well, that's a great idea. Yeah. So a typical breakfast might be, I mean, you can have toast for a while, right? That's going to, or pancakes, that's not going to be great on this. So,
you can have certain brands of gluten-free toast. When I say certain brands, it's only because there could be some ingredients that are high FODMAP in it, even though it wouldn't contain wheat, barley, or rye.
So tapioca starch is okay? That thing's made with tapioca?
You can have tapioca, you can have rice, white rice, brown rice, mm-hmm. you can have quinoa. So
like rice bread, which is okay. Okay.
Yeah. So there's definitely brands of bread that are okay. I have grocery lists in the book with brand names for all different categories of foods that you might be missing. Mm-hmm. I really try to make this super approachable and just work for everyone so that you don't feel deprived.
Mm-hmm.
But breakfast might be an omelet or a lactose-free yogurt with some berries on it.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that cruciferous family vegetables, like, you know, really healthy stuff, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, are those particularly bad when it comes to the FODMAP paradigm?
You know, many people who suffer from digestive issues will highlight those foods, which I think makes a lot of sense. When you look at the list of FODMAP content of these foods, you'll find that cauliflower ranks very high. That Brussels sprouts and broccoli sort of rank in the middle, meaning that you can enjoy them but in smaller quantities, like less than half a cup of broccoli, just a few sprouts of Brussels. And cabbage, actually, while I agree with you, or believe I agree with your premise, can be definitely difficult to digest, but interestingly, it ranks low on the FODMAP scale.
Mm. Okay.
But that's sort of a nuanced area, and, you know, if you're really suffering, I would probably steer clear of large amounts of cabbage.
So in your experience in working with people, obviously, one tool, you were an RD and you work with clients who have gastrointestinal problems, one of your specialties. What do you find? A certain percentage of people respond dramatically, some people respond partially, and some people respond not at all. So let's say you have a person who studiously follows the FODMAP diet and they still have gastro problems. What are you going to look for then? Where do you go after that?
Well, it depends on what foods I'm seeing that person is eating a lot of, but things that come to mind are looking further at the fiber content of their diet. Is it way too much still? Is it just not enough?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the types of fiber that they're eating. Is it soluble fiber, which can really help with your digestion? Is it insoluble fiber, which can irritate people sometimes? And then there are other food intolerances. Kind of, you know, you mentioned sucrose, and I mentioned the sucrase insufficiency. So that's a potential. If I see that someone's eating a lot of histamine foods, that could potentially mm-hmm. be another area to look at.
It's a whole other area. Do you find that digestive enzymes can sometimes help people overcome the a susceptibility to FODMAP intolerance, that actually it helps some people who have weak digestion break down the foods that they otherwise might not tolerate.
Yeah, I think that over-the-counter digestive enzymes can be helpful, definitely.
Like Beano, for example, that would be for the...
Exactly, I was just going to say Beano.
For the galacto-oligosaccharides, that comes from beans and certain foods like cauliflower, right?
Exactly. Beano can actually help with other foods besides beans. So, yes, I think it can definitely be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also take... I guess you would put lactate pills into the category of digestive enzymes as well. If you can't find enough lactose-free dairy products out there, you're eating out and you really want a pizza, but you're lactose intolerant, lactate pills can be very helpful.
And is it possible that certain probiotics can also help change the balance of bacteria in your gastrointestinal tract, rendering you more tolerant or suppressing the growth of the bad bacteria that cause all this gas?
Yes. I'm a huge proponent in the future of probiotics, so I really hope that one day we'll be able to look at the individual and be able to come up with a custom blend of probiotics that'll work for their particular condition. In the meantime, I think it's something that's worth experimenting with.
It's a little trial and error now.
Yep.
Okay.
I haven't encountered anything that's really a slam dunk.
Mm-hmm. The universal panacea for everybody's digestive problems.
Yep.
Yeah. More for constipation, it seems, than for the loose bowel movement phenomenon. But probiotics can help both, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, great. Anything you want to add? Crucial information, advice to people undertaking a low FODMAP diet?
I would say don't be intimidated. We can make this work for you. There's definitely ways to make the low FODMAP diet approachable and successful and not leave you feeling deprived. And the other big takeaway that we've talked about is that diet is a misnomer here. This is really a tool, and the goal is to put you on a short-term elimination diet, and then to guide you through testing your tolerance to different foods so that you can enjoy the widest variety of foods possible.
Indeed. And then you mentioned other resources. First of all, we'll reiterate that you have a website, which is DanielleCapolino.com. And the book is Healthy Gut, Flat Stomach, of course, available from all the usual sources. Now, other websites that you like to guide patients on the FODMAP diet?
Monash University, again, has a good website and app, so I would definitely recommend that.
Good. All right. Well, thank you very much for enlightening us. This is, as we've emphasized, a very valuable tool, and a tool that's only recently emerged in popularity over the last 5 years or so as a real pathway to relief from symptoms of gastrointestinal problems. And we want to get the word out to more and more people to access it, try it. A great way to ease yourself into that is via this book, Healthy Gut, Flat Stomach, Daniel Capolino, the author, The Fast and Easy Low FODMAP Diet Plan. Thanks a lot for your work. And by the way, let's also mention you have a practice, and your practice is open to patients across the country and around the world.
Yes.
Okay. So give us the info on that, please.
Yes, exactly.
You're looking. Yeah, I see you're a 212 number, so I called you right here in New York. We're neighbors.
I am on the Upper East Side. I work with patients virtually, so I can work with you anywhere.
Okay. Great.
There's more information on my website, and you can sign up for a free 10-minute consultation with me to figure out if it makes sense to work together.
Excellent. That's a good new paradigm, which allows people all over the country and across the world to interact with you. And our audience is wide, so not just confined to people in my hometown of New York City. Thanks very much for joining us, Danielle. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.